From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. This week marks 1 month since a gunman opened fire at the 4th of July parade in Highland Park, Illinois, killing 7 people, injuring dozens more. The shooting scarred a community holding its first Independence Day celebration since the COVID-19 pandemic put those sorts of things on hold. In the weeks since, vigils and funerals have come and gone, and yet people and organizations in the community continue working to help victims and survivors. We're also learning more about steps being taken to prevent a tragedy like this from happening again. Joining us now to talk about the latest in Highland Park is Jonah Meadows. He's the North Shore editor for Patch. Jonah, welcome to the program.
Hi, Brian. Great to be here.
And in a few minutes, we're also going to talk with a state representative who's taken a leadership role in the legislative response to this shooting. But first, I do want to mention and remind our listeners that in keeping with advice from experts we've spoken with, we are working to avoid using the suspect's name in our show, but we will be talking about his actions and the charges against him. So with that, listeners, you can always join our conversation if you have questions or comments at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455, or tweet us at 21st Show. So, Jonah, what have we learned in the days and weeks since the shooting occurred? And let's start with the victims.
Well, of the 7 victims, 6 of them died right away at the scene, and a 7th person died in the hospital the next day. It's you might have heard of the married couple, Arena and Kevin McCarthy, who leave behind their 2-year-old kid who was found alone. Underneath them, there's also Katie Goldstein, Stephen Strauss, Jackie Sondheim, and Nicholas Toledo, Eduardo Ovaldo. Everybody was from Highland Park or from Waukegan nearby. The town, a couple towns to the north of Highland Park. And we've gone through their funerals. We've learned a lot about each of them. And also we've learned a lot about some of the, about 50 people who were struck by gunfire or bullet fragments or shrapnel and who didn't die. They include 3 members of the Roberts family. You might have heard of 8-year-old Cooper Roberts, who was
paralyzed. And if I can interrupt you for a second there, because we actually have a clip. So I understand you were just talking about Cooper Roberts suffered a severed spine. We have a clip, audio clip from his mother, from another news outlet, who released a statement last week about her son's recovery process.
I just explain it as they fixed what could not be fixed in that little boy. It was nothing short of a miracle. They refused to give up on Cooper. They were not going to let that little boy die. And how do you say thank you for that? I mean, what words is a mother, is a family? What words do you possibly have for people that would not give up on your son?
So we just heard a clip there from, I guess it was a video that the family released. So what can you tell us about his condition now?
Yeah, that was Keely Roberts. She's actually a superintendent up in Zion, which is another Lake County town just north of Waukegan. Her son, Cooper, he was, I think, the youngest of the victims of the shooting. And they rushed him to Highland Park Hospital while they were triaging all the other victims, dozens of people coming in there. And they were able to stabilize him through a series of emergency surgeries because it was... You know, the high-powered rifle going through a little kid like that, it really tears them up. They severed his esophagus and other internal injuries that they needed to stabilize before they could get him medevaced in a hospital helicopter to Comer Children's Hospital in Hyde Park, where he was for, I think, more than 3 weeks, a little less than a month. And just on Sunday, he was stable enough, able to be transferred to the rehabilitation center. Now it's called the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab in River North. And he's in a wheelchair now, and he's able to eat solid food and interact with his dog again. And it seems like he is, you know, knock on wood, out of the woods in terms of being in immediate life-threatening critical condition, which he was for a good period of that time.
And this is not an unusual story, right? Because, I mean, we often focus on the the people who are actually murdered in these sorts of incidents, but as you said, dozens and dozens of other people have had life-altering injuries.
That's right. Yeah, and his mother, she was shot a couple times in the foot, and she, once she found out Cooper's condition, she rushed out. She discharged herself, basically, and went to the other hospital, even though the doctors were saying, you know, you're in no condition to leave. But, you know, she's a mom, and it's her kid. And her other son, Cooper's twin, he was not injured as badly, but he was, she's described it as maybe even more traumatic psychologically for him to experience watching his mother get shot and his brother be critically wounded. It's hard to imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Jonah Meadows, who's the North Shore editor at Patch, about the Highland Park shooting. It's been about a month since that happened. What have we learned about the shooter? What charges have filed? What is the status of that?
Well, alleged so far, shooter, the 21-year-old Highwood man, he lived in Highwood, but grew up in Highland Park. He's a dropped out of the Highland Park High School after sophomore year, I think. And he's had one court appearance so far, and he's been ordered to be held without any possibility of bond. And his next experience is set for tomorrow morning. He's going to be arraigned on an indictment that charges him with 117 felony counts. They've charged him for 3 counts of murder for each of the people who are dead, and then also 1 count of attempted murder, I think. Attempted murder and aggravated battery for every person who was wounded. So that when you add those all up together, it comes out to 117 counts. I think even with one of the murder charges, given the circumstances and the use of the gun and all that, it would be a life, it would be eligible for a life sentence off even one conviction. But these kind of cases, prosecutors usually like to bring everything they can. So tomorrow will be his first chance to plead not guilty or guilty. And his parents appeared to pay for a lawyer right away, but now he has no one representing him as far as I know. And so it's the public defender representing him. Although his parents have their own lawyer, I guess, in case they do get charged with something connected to how he was able to obtain the weapon that he used and the other weapons that he had. Found out pretty quickly after the incident that this accused mass shooter had 5 legally purchased guns that he bought when he was 18 or 19. I think 19. Most of them were purchased in the summer of 2020. And so that's leading to, I'm sure we'll talk about it later, questions about how the Illinois gun laws handle people who are potentially a danger to themselves or others.
Yeah, and that's where, just to remind listeners, if you're under age 21 in Illinois, you can purchase a firearm legally with, I believe it's a parent or guardian signing off on your firearm owner's identification card application.
And this suspect's father did that shortly after he turned 18, a few months after he turned 18, and a few months after the police were called to his house for a report that he had made threats to his family members, and they briefly confiscated some knives. And then after that, his father, who actually ran against the Highland Park mayor in the last election, he signed off on the paperwork. He picked up the knives again, and he says he doesn't regret it and doesn't think he did anything wrong.
Well, I think this is probably a good opportunity to bring State Representative Deb Conroy into the conversation from Villa Park in the suburbs of Chicagoland. Representative Conroy, thank you for being with us this morning on the 21st Show.
Thank you, Brian. And I'd like to just say thank you so much for not using the name of the shooter.
Sure, sure. Yeah, well, that's one of the first things we heard on our program after it happened is, it's just to remind listeners why we're doing that. It's generally thought that oftentimes people who engage in this sort of activity are looking to become famous. So anything that can be done to deny that is generally considered a good idea. So I understand, Representative, you introduced a proposal to prohibit FOID cards, firearm owner firearm owner's identification cards for anyone under the age of 24 who attempts or causes harm to themselves or others. Can you talk about that idea?
Yes. So I think that as we look at, you know, the statistics and this phenomenon that we're all living with, you know, statistically, these mass shooters are 18 to 22 year old white males. You know, there's so many questions and so much work that needs to be done to address why that is happening. But those families had no warning. They had no way to protect themselves. And this is how we can protect those families, is making sure that we close the loophole in the red flag law. And we make sure that when there is a situation similar to what happened in this case, that this individual is not able to acquire a FOID card, at least until the age of 24. And then we'll have to have some sort of evaluation in order to do so. And in terms of parents being able to do, you know, what his parents did, I don't know how you live with yourself when you stepped in and changed history because you felt, even though your child clearly showed they were having issues that were red flags, you allowed them to get weapons that in turn ended lives, took quality of lives, and left so many people living with the memories of being in a battlefield at a suburban parade. And those are PTSD symptoms that will never go away.
What sort of other activity is the General Assembly considering, or activity, that's the wrong word. What sort of legislation or policy response is the General Assembly considering in response to this?
So, you know, the General Assembly, everyone has been very shaken by all of this and listening to the stories about Connor. This is not the way a young boy wanted to become a hero. You know, we had General Assembly members that were a block from the shooting. You know, we're also dealing with, we've had shootings in our streets for years. We have so much that we need to deal with head on. And, you know, I really need to give the governor, the Senate president, and House Speaker Chris Welch the credit for recognizing that and putting together working groups to address what can we do? You know, where can we put these stop gaps? Where can we put in areas where we can protect families, where we can, you know, again, feel safe going to a parade? These are all conversations that are going to be had in working groups. The working groups have been thoughtfully put together. They're very diverse. And the what will come out of them, I think, will be very thoughtful and will address a lot of these issues in every possible way that we can.
So you're working on mental health, right? In your working group?
Yes.
What form does that take? Are there going to be hearings, or is the behind the scenes meetings? What's happening there?
So it'll mostly be behind the scenes hearings. We'll bring in advocates and providers, and we will have these deep conversations about, you know, where can we go? What can we do? I mean, we all have these gut instincts about, you know, what we want changed, but how can we do that with policy? How can we do that in statute? And so those are going to be difficult conversations. Our first meeting of my working group, there's other working groups as well, will begin next week. The goal is to start weekly and have those really important conversations.
So you're, as I mentioned, leading the mental health working group. There's also a gun safety working group. Sometimes people put those two ideas as either or in terms of responding to these sort of mass shootings. How do you think about that?
It's always a very difficult conversation because, you know, it's the blame game, right? Everybody wants to blame its mental health or its guns. But the reality is there's somewhat of an intersection that we've been kind of living with in the last, you know, decade or so with this new phenomenon that we're seeing in terms of, you know, these young men that for whatever reason, I mean, there's a lot of things we can talk about, isolation, bullying, other things that may lead them there, you know, the dark web, different things along those lines, video games. There's a lot you can bring to that conversation. But I think in terms of the guns, as long as we have more guns than people in the United States, how do we protect ourselves? I mean, in Illinois, we have the strongest gun laws in the 50 states, and yet all the states surrounding us are not the case. So you can come in from Indiana on a regular basis with guns. Highland Park had a ban on assault weapons. These are all tough conversations that we need to have. And we need to understand that when someone is struggling, whether it's, you know, through a health reason, or whether it is because they have an anger issue or whatever that might be, the access to guns are there. And many, almost every single one of these situations, these young men had access to a plethora of guns that they almost always purchased themselves legally.
Yeah. All right. We need to take a break. We're going to continue this conversation with State Representative Deb Conroy and Jonah Meadows, a North Shore editor of Patch, when we return. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking, it's been about a month since the terrible shooting at the Independence Day Parade in Highland Park, Illinois. We're talking about what's happened since then with the suspect in that, with the victims, both the survivors and those who did not survive. And we're talking about Illinois' policy response. We have Jonah Meadows, who's the North Shore editor for Patch, and Illinois State Representative Deb Conroy from Elmhurst, Villa Park, the 46th district in the western suburbs of Chicago. She's also leading one of four working groups considering ideas for a possible special session later this year. She's leading a group focusing on mental health. There's another one pertinent to our conversation today that's focusing on gun legislation. So, Jonah, I want to bring you back into this conversation now, because Highland Park held its first city council meeting since the shooting took place. It was last week. You provided us with audio clip from the meeting. Let's take a listen to that.
If there is a single step or many steps that we can take to save another human life and keep another town from enduring the pain, the agony, we have an obligation to try. No community is immune to gun violence.
Can you expand on that? What happened at the meeting?
Well, that was Mayor Nancy Rotering giving an opening statement at the meeting and sounding a lot of the same points that she made in her testimony at a Senate Judiciary Committee the previous week. She's a longtime proponent of the assault weapons ban in the local level and on the state level. Highland Park passed their assault weapons ban in 2013, and it was upheld at the federal appeals court level, and the Supreme Court declined to hear that a couple years later. And so that has stood, and they have enforced it, unlike some other places in Illinois that have a ban on the books but don't enforce it. Highland Park will take your assault weapon if they find it in a car and give you a fine driving through. But that doesn't stop you from buying it. And so they've been pushing for a statewide ban. And there actually is two pending bills in Springfield about that. One of them in the House has nearly enough co-sponsors already to pass. A bunch of them jumped on, dozens of them jumped on after the shooting. But in the Senate, where the Democrats also have a supermajority, they are a long way from having enough votes to pass it, despite having a supermajority and despite this being an issue that supposedly, is winning in public opinion, especially among Democrats. There aren't enough Democratic senators sponsoring the bill in the Senate, which is SB 2510, whereas the House one does look like it has enough votes to pass. And those working groups you're talking about with Deb Conroy, those are all in the House, and they're all Democrats. So they're, Democrats on their own are coming up with some legislation to propose that they think is going to be able to pass.
their caucus.
Well, of course, Democrats do have supermajorities in both the House and the Senate. Representative Conroy, what do you think are the prospects for a full, sort of complete ban on what, you know, are commonly known as assault weapons?
Well, as you heard, as Jonah said, we have large amount of support for that in the House. You know, I mean, I think the point is we need to ban the sale of them in Illinois, as well as, you know, the use of them. I can't really speak to the Senate as to why they don't have enough support, but that I don't know that the indication that you have X amount or don't have X amount of sponsors in the Senate is the complete picture as to whether or not you have support for that or not in the Senate. So I wouldn't jump to that conclusion. But I think
a fair
that
point.
You're
actually,
going
now
to...
that you mention it, don't you have to be in person to file? There may be some parliamentary reason that people have not yet signed.
Yeah, and yeah. Yes, and right. There's just you know, I mean, Representative Moore Hershauer is a fierce legislator, and she is sponsoring that bill and has actively worked that bill. That doesn't mean that the Senate does not have the same the same initiative or the same ideas. It just means that currently, you know, it may not have as many signatures. You don't actually have to be in person to co-sign on that. And I think I would put that question out to my Senate colleagues. You know, if they're not aware of it or if they haven't read it, I would request that they do.
What do you see any possibility for bipartisan agreement on any of this legislation? I mean, there was it wasn't a hugely leap forward in terms of what passed in Washington, but there were bipartisan votes for the legislation that came out of the Congress. Do you see any similar prospects for that in Illinois?
I do see that. Actually, a Republican senator reached out on the white flag law and was interested in carrying it in the Senate. And Senator Fine has it, and I know she's reached out to him. What I can say with all certainty
white flag law. I'm not familiar with that phrase. If you can,
the white flag law is the bill that I filed.
Okay, I didn't know that was okay. Thank you.
That's what they're calling it. That's HB 5766. So what I can tell you with certainty is that in the mental health space and addiction as well, you know, I've had the privilege to chair that committee in the House now for 6 years. And I always challenge people. I say, hey, come into my committee and you tell me a Republican from a Democrat. So in that space, I'm confident that we will have bipartisan support. I think the gun issue may be a little bit more of a challenge, but I do think we will have some bipartisan support. And again, that goes to the strength and the money involved in, you know, the gun lobby.
Jonah, in the time we have remaining in our conversation, there are continued efforts to help victims and survivors of the shooting. Can you talk a little bit? I understand the Bears recently hosted the Highland Park High School football team.
Yeah, that's right. Last week, the Highland Park Giants were among the invitees to the community day, the first community day the Bears had up in Lake Forest at the practice facility. And also last week, Billy Corgan, the founder of the Smashing Pumpkins, hosted a benefit concert at his tea shop in downtown Highland Park, which is actually just like a block from the site of the shooting and was shut down. Like all the businesses downtown were shut down for about a week after the shooting for the FBI investigation. But yeah, Corgan had a benefit concert last week there, and they streamed it live on YouTube. They had some special guests and raised money for the shooting response fund that the Highland Park Community Foundation has set up. And they're now working out a process for distributing that to the victims. And just they released, this just came out today, actually, from the organizers, that they, from that one concert, they raised more than $250,000 for this fund.
Wow.
So pretty impressive. And the Bears donated, I think it was $80,000, and then another $80,000 matched by the NFL's tax-exempt arm. And so that's $160,000 from that as well.
If everyday people want to continue trying to help those who were affected by the shooting, what can they do?
I think the Highland Park Community Foundation is the most reputable and organized of these groups. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of GoFundMes and individual things for individual victims and families that are collecting money. But the Highland Park Community Foundation has set up a committee of community members that is going to be setting up a application distribution process for that. So if you search, I believe, HPCF or HPCFIL.org is the website, you'll be able to find the community foundation that way.
All right. I want to thank Jonah Meadows, North Shore editor for Patch, and State Representative Deb Conroy for being with us today on the 21st Show. Thank you both.
Thanks.
Thank you.